Welcome to the Social Science of War. This podcast is brought to you by the Department of Social Sciences at West Point. We bring together scholars and practitioners to better understand warfare, the Army, and national security strategy. The views expressed in this episode do not represent the views of West Point or any agency of the U.S. government. We hope you enjoy the show. One of the goals of the Social Science of War podcast is to tackle complex strategic issues relating to international conflict through audio. But in today's episode, we're going to take a look at communication through a different medium, professional writing. Throughout the course of an Army career, it can be quite difficult for officers and non-commissioned officers to find the time and motivation to invest in the profession through the written word, or even engage in professional writing as a reader. My first guest today is Major Zachary Griffiths. Zach is a Special Forces officer who is currently the director of the Harding Project, an effort to renew the U.S. Army's professional publications. General Randy George, the U.S. Army Chief of Staff, calls strengthening the Army profession through the Harding Project a chief priority, and Zach joins us today to talk about why both he and General George are passionate about this initiative. We are also joined by Dr. Nora Bensahel, a professor of practice at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a contributing editor and columnist for War on the Rocks. Nora is a renowned expert on U.S. defense policy, military operations, and the future of war. But her experience teaching and working with flag officers at the Army Strategic Education Program has given her unique insights into the challenges in and importance of writing effectively to communicate the needs of our Army to senior military and civilian leaders. After Zach gives us an overview of Army professional bulletins and some of the initiatives of the Harding Project, Nora discusses some potential downstream effects of this renewed emphasis on writing in the context of professional military education programs and the Army's recruiting challenges. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Major Zach Griffiths and Professor Nora Bensahel. All right, so as I mentioned in our introduction, my guests today are Major Zach Griffiths and Professor Nora Bensahel. Zach, if you would introduce yourself to the audience, please.
Hi, thanks, Gabe, for having me. As you said, I'm Major Zach Griffiths. I'm a Special Forces officer in the Army and former American politics instructor in the Department of Social Sciences, and so I thank you for having me today. Relevant to this podcast, I direct the Harding Project that aims to renew professional writing in the Army. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And Nora, would you introduce yourself as well?
Sure. I'm Nora Bensahel. I'm a professor of practice at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies here in Washington, D.C. I also co-author a column at War on the Rocks and have been involved in professional military education and helping oversee the U.S. Army War College on their board of visitors for a number of years.
Wonderful. All right, Zach, so we're going to start with you. After all, we're mostly here for the Harding Project. So I've been an active duty Army officer for almost 12 years now, and I must confess, I do not read professional bulletins of any kind. As a way of introducing your work for the Army Chief of Staff, could you first explain what professional bulletins are, and then tell us a bit about the Harding Project mission?
Professional discourse is really important. Sharing thoughts and challenging ideas is part of, you know, what makes our Army the envy of the world. At their best, the Army's journals cultivate military thought on topics like others won't touch. You know, Nora writes a column for War on the Rocks, which is fantastic. But, you know, the Combined Arms Breach needs Engineer magazine. For the engineers can debate the finer parts of that. We also need these to help improve unit training management. And these are the really military technical topics that just aren't going to get covered anywhere else. So we thought about how to structure an initiative. I drew inspiration from the story of Forrest Harding, who retired as a major general, but he renewed mailing lists in the 1930s, which is now infantry, and confusingly also renewed infantry journal, which is now Army, published by AUSA in the 1930s. Harding said in his initial note in mailing list that professional journals disseminate and stimulate military thought. And so we think about that stimulation as going down, letting leaders like General George communicate that, hey, this is their priorities, these are their focus areas, up as leaders or maybe very junior folks see a problem and they want to communicate to someone other than their battalion commander. They also let us reach laterally and develop communities of interest. So, you know, as FM30 is published, it comes down. There's people that see problems that communicate up. And there's also folks that see, hey, UAS is going to be a problem. We see this in Ukraine. They communicate laterally. We can also find inspiration in our history of these. They go back more than 100 years in some cases. Armor magazine starts in 1888. And they also make us better writers. And so those are some of the things that make these journals important and why I would encourage you to read them. But I would say here too, you know, we're not as good as we once were. Army's journals publish less frequently, fewer pages, and more erratically. They've also largely missed the jump to web-first, mobile-friendly formats. War on the Rocks, as Nora said, right, where she publishes a column, right, they're perfect to this. You know, they publish in a medium that you can read on your phone, on your computer, they have supporting podcasts, and they use social media to push it. The Army has also reduced staffing, which is part of the problem here. And then we also found, as I presented a paper at West Point last week, you know, we don't cite our own work. And so to me, that suggests a low level of engagement across the Army. I've got a lot more evidence on the Substack. I encourage you all to follow it at hardingproject.com. And I would just say broadly what we're doing, and I'll get in hopefully in more detail on this later, is we're going to empower a steward to set policy, oversee, and advocate for our journals. We're going to modernize to this web-first, mobile-friendly format. We're going to invest in and protect editorial staff. We're going to improve the archives so that we can learn from our past. And then we're also going to improve education, try and raise the average understanding of our journals, and also investing in those with the aptitude and inclination. So it's kind of a lot, Gabe, but that's what we're trying to do with the Harding Project.
Great answer, and thank you for the encouragement. I will certainly look into reading more professional bulletins. Nora, switching to you here a bit. So you've spent some time teaching at the Army Strategic Education Program, or ASEP for short. Tell us about what ASEP is designed to do for flag officers and what you observed about professional writing during your time there.
ASEP is the Army's professional development program, level of professional military education, if you will, for the General Officer Corps. It has different levels, different iterations at the 1-star, 2-star, and 3-star level. I've been involved for quite a number of years now in the 2-star level, ASEP A. And my role in that comes from my War on the Rocks hat, not my teaching hat, but they're related. All of the 2-star generals who participate in ASEP A are required to write an op-ed, ideally for publication. They don't have to publish it, but you know, as if it were to be submitted for publication. They are then brought in, after working with some writing coaches for a while, to have an oral defense of their op-eds and present them to two people who work in the media space, in the national security media space. So I serve as one of those folks. And I will tell you that over a number of years of working with these senior Army leaders, their level of writing, their ability to communicate clearly to outside audiences, which is what ASEP focuses on up at that strategic level, their ability to write for and communicate with civilian audiences and even the broader Washington national security community, which is mostly civilians, really isn't very good at all. Now, part of that is because the best way to become a good writer is to write more. And of course, people who've made it to that level have had extraordinarily busy careers doing many, many other things than writing. But I'm increasingly concerned that when the writing at that level isn't very good, it really harms the Army in terms of the ability to tell its story, to make its case in budget deliberations, for example, to tell the nation the story of the Army, and for people both in the national security community and the American citizenry at large, makes it very difficult for them to understand what the Army does. And so, you know, by participating in that program, I hope to help move their writing and communication skills in that direction.
Well, thank you. And I think I see some parallels here with Zach's work. So how might the Harding Project and what Zach is trying to do over there, how might that contribute to officers' ability to communicate through writing perhaps earlier in their careers before they're reaching this professional development school at the flag officer level where we're expecting them to communicate through writing at kind of this higher level you're talking about?
Yeah, I think the Harding Project is a terrific initiative. I've been following Zach and his work closely, and I think it is exactly the kind of thing that is needed. Because as I said before, the best way to become a good writer is to write a lot and get honest feedback and figure out what's working and what isn't. It can be a very discouraging process, but it's really important in order to make your ideas clearer. I think the idea of inculcating writing habits and getting some writing experience earlier on in an Army officer's career is extremely important, and even for senior NCOs as well. It's not just the officer corps. The more you can do that at earlier levels, the better it will be when you get to the more senior levels, when you're thrown into that broader national security decision-making space. I don't think we require enough writing at our PME institutions. That's probably not a very popular opinion. But as I said, I sit on the board of visitors of the Army War College, and I will tell you that the students there who are getting an accredited master's degree do a lot less writing than the graduate students I teach at SICE on a regular basis. And so even better writing, and especially writing for outside audiences, I think once you get to that senior war college level, and maybe even some at the ILE level, you need to be doing some of that. Of course, most of what the Harding Project is doing is internal conversation rather than external. But again, the more you can write, the better you get at it, the easier it becomes. And so anything that you can do on those early levels, I think, is extremely important.
Totally agree with Nora. And one of the things I think is like really elegant with the Army's existing framework of journals is that they take you exact an Army officer and CO on exactly that journey, right? You start writing for Aviation Digest, right? Gabe is an aviator who reads Professional Bulletin every rapidly. And then when he gets to the Command General Staff College, right, he writes for Military Review, which is a more diverse audience and has a slightly different level of thought, maybe, or a different level of thinking about professional issues or the issues you think about. And then on to Parameters, right, which is sort of scholarly and peer-reviewed. And so I think that framework is great as officers advance in their career. They can also advance and think about different audiences. And we have a whole network that can support them.
Yeah, I recall at the aviation career course, the required writing assignment was to write about like a military battle of some kind. So I wrote about the invasion during the Korean War. And I remember thinking like, why am I writing a military history paper at the aviation captain's career course? Meanwhile, they were encouraging us to write white papers about something relevant to aviation, but it was more just like a, hey, here's a good thing to do. Wasn't one of the requirements. So I wonder if there's some room to reconsider flip-flopping that in some level. So Zach, I'd like to get into a little bit more of the specifics. You mentioned some. Certainly, I think we would all like to see something mobile-friendly, right? Anything that's easy to pull up on the smartphone on the go. But any other changes we may see in professional bulletins with the Harding Project? How do you see platforms, outlets, archives, and the education changing after this?
Yeah, thanks, Gabe. I think we convened about 50 experts up at West Point in the fall to really consider the areas of modernization, staffing, archives, and education. We have a report that hopefully will be coming out in the next couple of weeks that just details kind of the recommendations that came out of the workshop. But I'll summarize them for us here, and then hopefully we'll see those start to get implemented over the next weeks and months. But kind of the one that came out that wasn't in one of those categories was about empowering a steward. And what we found was that each of the Army's professional bulletins was totally alone on an island. This isn't a naval podcast, right? But, that meant that the editors and the staff that were there had no one to sort of reach to if they were having problems or they were, maybe they wanted to change the way they publish, but they couldn't get support. And so empowering a steward will help the Army set policy, oversee, hold people accountable, and also provide an advocate for these journals for each of the centers of excellence. So they're kind of alone. Under the current construct, we're hoping to tie them into a community of interest. As you touched on the modernization, I think this one's pretty clear and just technical, but, web first, mobile friendly, supported by social media. And so that means, right, you should be able to pull out your phone for the scrolling soldier, we say sometimes too, right? If you're on Instagram, you're on Twitter, X, these sites should be pushing to you, and then you can click on it and go right to the article. You should be able to share that to someone else. Likewise, if you're reading it on your phone and you decide, hey, I really want to dig into this, it should be nicely on your computer. And then when you print it too, you should be able to print it and carry it to an LPD session, right? Also, people want to listen to this, download and listen to it. So also moving to a continuous publication model, similar to as War on the Rocks or MWI does. So those are some very technical things that you should see us roll out here over the next couple months. On staffing, this is an area where we found each of the journals, I worked in Army Force Management last year, and so I dug into the old TDAs for some of these journals, and they used to have maybe 6 personnel assigned, I think infantry did. And then you can see that got cut back to 3, and then it disappears as a line on the TDA. And so what we need to do is just both make some moderate investments in the staffing, but then also set up a structure that they're, relatively resilient from cuts in the future. So we're working on that. I mentioned the archives, and I'm going to post on this soon, but there's about 6,000 issues of Army professional journals that have been published over the last 140 years or so, but they're on 33 different websites. And so what we're going to do is take those archives at the issue level, convert them to the article level, make them searchable all in one place. We think we've identified a partner that can help us do that, make it really searchable. So you can find this both on our web platform, but also through Google Scholar and some of these other ways to really make them much more accessible. And then finally, on the education side, we see kind of two-tier approach here. The first is kind of raising the average, right? And that's to make sure that students like you, Gabe, right, when you're a career course student, you have heard, hey, Aviation Digest exists. You have a branch magazine. So does every sergeant and above, right? So it should be for sergeants, at ALC, SLC. It exists at a minimum. And then also that the Army at some point teaches you how to write an article for the branch room. So I don't know that history requirement. Maybe that paper gets turned from an essay into an article as if for Aviation Digest. in your case, right? So that everyone has had at least some training and has thought about how might they be able to contribute. We also want to invest in some programs for those that demonstrate the aptitude and inclination. So I think of like the Art of War Scholars Program at the Command General Staff College. You have to test in, opt in. It's very intense. But for folks that want to do it, you know, they come out and they have published as a requirement for that course. There's also the Carlisle Scholars Program at the Army War College. And then we see there could be a similar program at the Sergeant's Major Academy and maybe some other. So broadly, you know, that's a suite of efforts that aim to renew the Army's journals. But over the next, you know, 6-8 months, I'm hopeful that we'll see major change across those areas. And I'm hoping really all those aim at accessibility, making sure people can get this information, that it comes to them, and they don't have to fight for it.
Yeah, I love that we're thinking about including the NCO Corps, right? I think so often we think like this is something officers need to do or get good at or have it be a skill to communicate professionally through writing. But I absolutely love that we're thinking about how to incorporate the NCO Corps there too. So sort of on that, I mean, Nora, you've done some work researching the Army's recruiting woes, for lack of a better word. And officer recruiting seems to be fine, and retention seems to be fine. But you point out that the primary issue is finding and recruiting talented young people to sign up for an initial enlistment. Is there an opportunity to display the professionalism of the all-volunteer force by better broadcasting Army scholarship somehow? Like, how can we maybe better appeal even to undergraduates in college who may be considering various options in the workforce? Sometimes we only think of recruiting very young men and women out of high school, right? But there's also plenty of people in undergraduate institutions considering various career options, and why not promote the Army as one of them?
No, that's exactly right. I do think that there is a real role for writing and other forms of communication to help try to address the recruiting crisis. I often say that the all-volunteer force, which of course we've had since 1973, has led to the most professional, most capable military force that the U.S. has ever seen, that the world has ever seen. But its one Achilles heel has been it has separated most of the American people from those who serve over time. And there's a lot of reasons for that and a lot of ways in which that's unfolded. But what that means is that fewer and fewer Americans every year know anything about the military. And one of the best ways to reach them is for people who are their peers to reach out in one way or another to help explain what the Army is about, what serving in the Army is like. I think that there are lots of ways to do that. You can write letters or op-eds to your local newspaper back home. You know, invite a reporter to, you know, interview you to talk about your recent deployment somewhere, obviously subject to the limits of classification, but just to get a sense of, you know, what it is that you do in the Army. Writing little items for high school newsletters, for alumni newsletters, also a way of reaching out and making that a more regular part of an expectation of what junior officers, but also more senior NCOs do. I think you're exactly right on the importance of NCOs. And for the recruiting crisis, it's probably even more important that their voices get out, since as you said, recruiting is hitting the enlisted force far more than the officer corps. I want to also echo something that Gabe, you said just a few moments ago, which is that one of the secrets to writing is that every idea can be packaged in several different ways for different audiences. You can take the same basic idea and you can write a 700-word op-ed for a newspaper. You can write a 1,500-word version that gets published in an outlet like War on the Rocks or somewhere else like that. You can write the 8-to-10-page article that appears, you know, in Military Review or something like that. And then you can write the 30-page scholarly article with full citations that's going to appear in Parameters. So being able to take one idea or one experience and write about it in different ways for different audiences too, I think is a really important skill as you go up that chain that Zach mentioned, as you move from the tactical to the operational and then particularly to the strategic level. I think that's something that's quite important as well.
Yes, and as you're mentioning different outlets and ways of writing, I'd be remiss if I don't plug MWI, the Modern War Institute, who platforms us. If folks are interested, we will include maybe something in our show notes for this episode on how you can get involved with potentially sending something to be published on any of those platforms. So, Zach, I'm curious, how does the Sergeant Major of the Army feel about this and drawing this tie between your efforts with professional writing to either recruiting or development of the enlisted or NCO Corps on that side of things? Like, do they see any insights on the possibility of seeing downstream effects of improving Army professional writing more generally? Like, see any synergies there with their recruiting efforts?
Yeah, thanks, Gabe. When this idea first started to surface and was getting traction, Sergeant Major of the Army Weimer, you really jumped in and it was insistent that we recruit and encourage non-commissioned officers to write more than maybe they had in the past. And so my partner in crime here, my deputy director, is our first class Leighton Summerlin, who wrote a great article for an infantry magazine on standards and excellence. But what I liked about it was that he called for a specific discourse on standards in the NCO Corps. And I thought that was like unusual. So that was part of the reason he was recruited to help with this effort. But on, you know, the question of the broader downstream effects, you know, just teaching officers, NCOs, warrant officers to write better lets them communicate better. We should be more successful as a bureaucracy for all the reasons that Nora said. And then also just, you know, communicating more clearly, writing orders, those things. But to the recruiting question, you know, if you teach someone to write, they can write for a variety of formats. It might be the internal outlets that I've talked about and Nora has, but also, you know, writing that op-ed to the or hometown newspaper, or that might help with recruiting. You know, the ability to write will improve communication skills. You can apply in a bunch of places. One of my favorite ideas, though, that has come out of this whole project is with regard to recruiting is to revive the recruiter journal. This was something that ran for like almost 100 years and died about 8 years ago. But this is a way, you know, you could help connect recruiters and other people within that community on really professional issues or technical issues related to recruiting and help share best practices, develop communities of interest around key ideas. So I would love to see maybe that outlet come back as well as a way to tie together this writing effort with the Army's one of its major problems right now, which is recruiting.
I agree with that completely. And again, writing for different audiences in different formats is a skill that you develop by doing it. But I think the key insight that most people don't realize is you can take the same substantive idea and frame it in lots of different ways targeted to particular different audiences. I'm glad you plugged MWI because they published terrific work. I think of it more as like an internal U.S. military war on the rocks. It's got those same broad articles for a wide variety of folks, but very much within issues of interest to the Army. So I think that's a great place to aspire to write for. And again, starting at some of those more tactical journals develops the skills that you need later on in order to be able to publish those kind of pieces of broader strategic interest.
So, Nora, we've got a very busy officer in NCO Corps, right? And we can encourage people all day to publish in any of these kind of journals or publications through Harding Project or whatever else, right? But I think what maybe concerns me is like if there's no forcing function, because it's all these things that we've discussed are optional. So from your viewpoint, what you've seen at ASEP and you've talked about work at Carlisle Barracks and in the War College as well, like, what is your assessment of writing standards in Army institutional professional development courses before ASEP? And do you think that we should be, I don't know, changing or incorporating something that increases those standards somewhere before we're saying, hey, you're a flag officer and we want you to be able to communicate at this level? Do you have any thoughts on that as kind of an outside perspective? I think we could certainly benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will answer your question, but I want to pick up on one thing you said just before that. You said, you know, writing is pretty much optional now, and that's a correct statement today, but it's going to become increasingly not optional, right? If you look at the various command assessment programs that have been put in place over the past several years, they include a writing component at the higher levels, certainly for battalion command and then brigade command, precisely because being able to communicate to others clearly in writing as well as orally. Army folks generally do pretty well at the oral part. They're not as sharp on the writing part because that's what they do to their soldiers all the time, trying to communicate more usually what the, you know, objectives are, commander's intent, all of those various things. So I don't really think it's going to be as optional as it has been anymore, because it is explicitly now something that's being used as part of the screening for command, and those skills will become increasingly important, making it even more important to start earlier. You asked about, you know, my assessment of the writing standards before ASEP. I do think they have improved somewhat. ASEP is a relatively new program in the past 10 years or so. So, I mean, it hasn't been around for nearly as long as some of the other levels of professional military education. I think one of the biggest challenges that I've seen in the Army, even more than the other services, is an inability to realize how much your vocabulary is shaped by Army things. And so people talk in acronyms, they talk in jargon that makes it really incomprehensible for people who have not also been inside the service to understand what you're saying. This is an outdated acronym now, but I like it so much, I'll use it as an example. My partner in crime, since Zach used that term, is a retired Army Lieutenant General Dave Barno. He and I write our column together. We teach together. We've written a book together. His favorite example of this is that, you know, the Army is the only service that could come up with a three-letter acronym, you know, POV for car, for personally owned vehicle. And, you know, that's no longer the acronym, but you stop and think about it, right? And it's ridiculous that when you tell Army folks, you know, what does the acronym mean? Sometimes they'll be confused because they don't realize they're using jargon like that. Sometimes they'll just spell it out, which isn't particularly helpful because, again, if you're not immersed in that environment, people all the time, you think of those things that are really helpful on the battlefield that don't have pilots, you know, remotely piloted vehicles, the Air Force calls them, all sorts of different acronyms for them. Spelling that out is not the same as saying the word drone when you're trying to communicate with outside audiences. And so I think an awareness of that is really important. And a lot of what I do in providing feedback on most of the essays at that two-star level, again, is trying to help those general officers speak to people who don't have Army as their native language. You know, this is kind of like explaining physics to your grandmother, right? Can you break it down into the most simple terms possible to explain it to people who haven't, again, grown up in the Army? Again, that's one of the focuses at the more senior levels, right? When you're talking about, you know, at the junior officer level or even at the field grade officer level, certainly at the lower levels of that, you are talking to Army audiences. You are focusing on the types of publications that Zach is referring to and working on. And again, those do scale up all the way up to parameters as a more scholarly journal. But I think that getting into those habits of, you know, building the habits of being able to speak plainly about complicated topics is something that I wish was more present in the War College curricula, in CGSC, really all the way down, because that's going to have a long-term impact on your ability to communicate more broadly.
I'm curious, let's see if we can make it look out for officers' selfish interest here. Why should people write? I mean, maybe this is a bit of a too meta a question, but what is the benefit for an officer to voluntarily go out of their way to write? It's kind of a very general question, but Nora, I'll start with you. And then Zach, if you want to comment on that too.
I think that there are a couple of different answers to that. Yes, of course, everybody is extremely busy. I know the demands on everybody in uniform, but I think it is part of the public service mission of the service as, you know, part of the nation to explain what you do, especially at a time of, you know, where recruiting is such a crisis. I think that's to help the institution move forward is a very important reason to be doing that. But again, I think it's also about developing your own critical thinking and your own communication skills in ways that will pay off much later. My mother was an editor. She worked on business publications, so nothing related to what I do for a living. But she once told me when I was having trouble with an essay in college and I called her for help, she was very annoying. She said to me in a very cheerful voice, I said, writing is so hard. She said, no, writing is easy. Thinking is hard. You know, and I hung up the phone on her because that wasn't what I wanted to hear when I was having a crisis as a college freshman, right? But, you know, when you think about it, she's right. The process of writing forces you to figure out what you really mean. It's a kind of painful way to do that, but it benefits the person writing in addition to those outside audiences that I think it's really important for the Army to be communicating with. And increasingly, it's a skill that the Army is going to require. As I said, it's now part of the command assessment programs. I would like to see it proficiency in writing and taking on the extra work of writing in the types of journals that we've been talking about. I'd like to see that be positively counted towards promotion and command decisions at those lower levels before you get to those command assessment programs. You know, whereas I'm not sure how much they are today, I think that's something that'll be needed, the value of that to be instilled in promotion boards over time.
That's great. I love that as, you know, writing forces you to slow down and think deliberately and then pick and choose exactly how and why you're going to communicate the way you are. Zach, I'm curious your thoughts. I mean, you've kind of sat in my shoes here. I'm currently teaching American politics, and we're going through the, I think among the faculty, these questions of like, well, why, if we have like ChatGPT and all of these AI large language learning models, but if we have these things, like how valuable is writing? And of course, I come out and say it's very valuable and it's very important, but it's hard. I find it hard to articulate why. And I think Nora sort of touched on it, right? Like it forces you to slow down and think and come up with original thoughts, which is why we're very prescriptive with certain assignments where you can and cannot use some of the new tools that are out there. But I don't know, having been here and taught cadets and now doing what you're doing, what do you think? What are the selfish reasons why Army officers and NCOs should opt into writing?
Yeah, so I definitely think and agree with Nora that, you know, clear writing is clear thinking. So there's like some less tangible but really important ones just about improving your ability to communicate in writing, ability to think clearly and clearly articulate an argument. Nora talked about CAP as an important one, which I totally agree with. You know, you're going to get some kind of essay there. You have to respond to it. And so if you're practiced at this, that's an easy day. There's also a benefit, though, about joining kind of a professional community. You know, by writing, you put yourself out there as someone who has ideas. You identify that you have personal expertise in a particular, it may not feel that way when you write an article on training management, but now sort of by virtue of having written that article and engaging with other people on training management, you become sort of an expert in that area, and people are may seek you out to have your ideas heard. I'm one of the women who I work with here for the Harding Project. You know, she wrote an article about training for sexual harassment and assault prevention and was asked then to come speak at a conference on this subject, right? So just putting yourself out there and sharing your ideas are important for the Army. I would also say, you know, there may be like job opportunities that come with writing. You know, I was picked for a CAG position because I had written. I thought I was coming for a hard interview. And in fact, the guy mostly just wanted to see that I had a haircut, right? And so he knew I could write, and that's what he wanted to pick for. I do want to say, though, that's good for you, right? There's like a bunch of things, you know, but I think that really as professionals, you know, we should also be looking out for what's the good of the Army and try to strengthen the Army and make it a more effective fighting force. And so, you know, by writing and building communities' interest or sharing up ideas that we have, you know, we help provide bottom-up refinement, which is something we do in the orders process and also something we can do professionally. The Army also benefits from our improved communication skills as we give better orders or we, you know, are more clear in our speech. But, you know, whether it's good for the Army, it's good for you, I would say writing has impact. And I would give you maybe three cases, because I often get this question. People really want a nice, neat story that says, hey, I write an article on this, and it leads to this policy change. And so I have a couple. One, Nora mentioned, you know, articles MWI. You know, they published an article on tracking foreign disclosure officers. There had been no system, even though there were thousands that were trained. And so he wrote this article. And then months later, you know, there was an ASI that was introduced to let the Army track these people. Right? So there's a really neat story where the guy basically says, hey, this is a problem. I've identified a solution. And the Army implements that solution. You know, one that's a little bit more nebulous is like the change in Army Keystone Doctrine. But here we can see writing's impact. We started with multi-domain battle, which I think General Perkins published in like 2017. You know, essays, writings, both internal and external, right? That get us to multi-domain operations, that get us to FM30. And so you're only sort of putting your finger on the scale. You're not going to be the decisive voice in that change, but it's important. And then the last I would say is, you know, General George talks a lot about this article on training management he read in an infantry magazine article in 1992, right? You may think, hey, this article is not that important. It's just on training management. But like if that article was read by 100 people, you know, that's 100 companies in the infantry that are now better run as a result of the, you know, conclusions that senior company commander had for training management. And so, you know, the impact can mean a lot of things. Sometimes you may write and feel like it had no impact at all, and you may be right. But in many cases, you know, unless you put yourself out there and you share what you think is a good idea or identify an important problem, you don't know. So, I mean, probably, you know, writing is good for you, good for the Army. And, it, you know, it matters ultimately at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think, Zach, your story is quite instructive. The fact that you wrote something that, you know, someone picked up and caused a bit of a, I don't know, a new thought, a bit of a stir. And they're like, wow, this guy's pretty sharp. Maybe we should get him to really hopefully revolutionize the way we're doing some of our professional publications here. Nora, any closing last thoughts for us as we wrap up here?
Yeah, I think this has been a great conversation. And as I said, I'm a big fan of what the Harding Project is doing. I guess I would just reiterate a point that Zach made at the beginning and we've been talking about, which is that there is a progression of writing. You know, you probably shouldn't start by trying to write a scholarly article or, you know, trying to get your very first piece of writing ever published in a place like War on the Rocks or MWI. You want to start with smaller things to get into that habit, to get good at it, because writing can be frustrating, again, because it forces you to be clear about what you think and what you want to communicate. And so doing some low stakes writing, again, you know, I use the example of, you know, if your high school has an alumni newsletter or you write something short for a local paper about your own experiences, things like that, where, you know, if you don't get it exactly right, it's fine. It's still helpful. It'll still get you used to writing. I think that that's really helpful to not have the first couple of things you try to write, especially for publication, to be high stakes ones where you're going to, you know, where the competition's going to be really hard. And again, the progression of possible places to publish within the Army, I think, nicely offers that. I think beyond that, though, the areas where I'd like to see some improvement is I'd like to see more writing being required at the formal PME levels, both an ILE and especially at the War College. I don't think there's enough, you know, you guys in the military get these incredible breaks for education that no other government agency gives to its people. And I think, you know, being able to come out of those courses, being able to write more clearly is something that's very, very important, because that is time where you're not juggling that with being in command or, you know, being the S3 of a busy brigade, right? So that's your time to develop yourself, and it is supposed to be a step back to learn skills and reflect on them and get better at things you might not be so good at the beginning. And so that's on my personal wish list that I advocate for all the time at the War College and other places as well.
Great point. Zach, any closing thoughts there? She kind of touches on maybe formalizing some of this in PME, any maybe partnerships or synergies you see with Harding Project there, or any just other general closing thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I was at a panel this week and an editor said on the subject of writing, which really ties to what Nora was just saying there, don't expect to be a prize fighter out of the gate, right? You're going to take some jabs and you're going to get knocked out once or twice. As a guy who was not maybe the highest rated plebe in plebe boxing, you know, this metaphor really spoke to me. I haven't gotten much better at boxing, but I have gotten better at writing by putting myself out there. You know, in terms of, you know, partnership opportunities and kind of like the call to action here, you know, I would say we're going to publish a bunch of how-to guides in partnership with Military Review over the next few weeks, mid months. And so these will be on subjects like, you know, how to write an article, how to write a book review, how to run a unit writing program. And so those are ways that people either in PME or in the field can get involved with writing. I would also encourage folks to follow our Substack. We, you know, at hardingproject.com, I run a Substack. We publish twice a week. If you like this material related to professional writing and you're just curious to follow kind of the progression of this effort there, please do follow along. And then, you know, finally, I would say the most important thing that we can do, you know, is trying to inform everyone and then get everyone involved in this important part of professional discourse. The Chief of Staff of the Army, General George, right? He sees professional discourse as the key. Professional writing is one piece of that. And so hopefully you choose to take the plunge and write. But if not, you know, talk about this stuff with your peers and friends, you know, convene groups to think about the professionalism in the Army or warfighting in the Army. Let's make the Army better.
Great. And to that end, we will have links to Zach's Substack in addition to other things he's published and Nora has published. And hopefully we'll find a way to throw something in there about maybe how to for if folks are looking at MWI or on the rocks or something even lower threat than that. If you're looking for a place to get started, maybe we can put something in the show notes there. But I can't thank you enough, both of you, for your time today. And this is definitely something near and dear to my heart as I teach cadets and tell them, yes, it does matter that you follow the directions and hit Times New Roman 12-point font, 800 to 900 words. So it's nice to talk to some other people who can back me up Absolutely. On that a little bit. So thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks very much for the invitation and for the great conversation.
Yeah. Thanks, Gabe and Nora. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Social Science of War podcast. This podcast was brought to you by the Department of Social Sciences at West Point. If you enjoyed the episode, please consider subscribing, leave a rating and comment, and most importantly, please share the Social Science of War with others. One final note, what you heard in this episode does not represent the views of West Point or any other agency of the U.S. government.